Today is a day to remind ourselves that however much Barack Obama has wanted to focus on peace and the ending of war during his 6 trips to New York as President of the United States to speak to the UN General Assembly meeting, it just hasn't been possible in this era. This year is no exception. Fighting in the Middle East, in Ukraine and Eastern Europe, global terrorism, all are on the agenda. The president is also pushing his efforts to widen what he calls the global coalition, the global consensus, to fight these battles, particularly terrorism. He wants global rules, uniform global rules to fight terrorism. The president will be pushing for the UN to adopt a resolution that will allow sanctions to be applied to countries that don't join an international consensus to enact measures to restrict the travel of terrorist suspects and keep them from crossing borders to join extremist organizations. Well, can such a protocol work? How would it even be worded? Diallo Shammas is an attorney at the CLEAR organization, Creating Law Enforcement Accountability and Responsibility. It's a project at the City University of New York. Diallo, welcome.
Thank you for having me, John.
So this smacks to me of something like the nonproliferation treaty, the nuclear nonproliferation treaty. If you don't sign it, you're subject to a bunch of sanctions. Now, that involves nuclear programs that are very specialized and rare. Can you do the same kind of thing, have a set of uniform rules for travel for terrorist suspects, and that if you don't follow them, you can sanction those countries?
Well, what's really difficult about this is that we don't really know what this will look like yet, of course. And while we're all for international coordination, particularly on matters like international terrorism, it's really hard to imagine how this is going to work, particularly when the only track record we know of here in the United States of trying to prevent people to fly has been a formidable disaster.
The no-fly list.
The no-fly list.
How's that worked or not worked?
So the no-fly list is a government watch list, which currently has about 47,000 names. It's been a tenfold increase since the Obama administration.
And part of why it's a good model for this is because it's an example of shared consensus between security organizations in the United States. So CIA shares with FBI, FBI shares with local law enforcement, that sort of thing. Imagine if those were countries, they would share the information, you enact rules. That's sort of the idea here.
Well, that would be the ideal. It was the attempt to share information after 9/11, but it has ballooned into this monstrosity, which essentially prevents you from boarding any flight, but then doesn't really let you appeal or complain about or get any kind of meaningful review over your placement. So you can't contest whether or not you should be actually prevented from boarding.
So easy to get on the list, almost impossible to get off the list.
Basically impossible to get off the list. And there has been litigation ongoing for over 6 years now in different lawsuits. And a court has even said that this is the process that we provided is insufficient. And yet it's still there and it's still fully functioning.
So courts say there's no due process here and that has to be designed. If you were going to design the kind of due process that might work, what would it look like?
Well, I think at the very minimum, you need to be able to challenge your placement in a meaningful way, right? So you should be able to, you need to be provided with the reasons for your placement, and that's not something that we provide now.
So you need to be notified in advance of travel. You can't just show up at the airport and expect to be able to challenge something.
Which is how it currently works.
Right.
And not only then, when you do show up at the airport and you're prevented from boarding, so now you know that you're on the no-fly list, the process to get yourself removed is just submitting a form that's this kind of online form that provides very little information, and the result that you get is a uniform letter, just neither confirming nor denying whether you're actually on the no-fly list.
No way to track the result of your challenge, of your protest, anything like that?
No way, and that's why this is a subject of so much litigation at the moment. So you can imagine how difficult it is to try to imagine this at the global level. How are we going to have a system of checks and balances? How are we going to provide the process if we can't implement it here with our fairly robust judicial system and we've been at it for so many years? How are we going to transfer that globally?
What are the complications you could envision with country-to-country agreements? You'd have maybe ethnic and religious requirements that might get in the way of U.S. civil liberties that would cause these sorts of restrictions? I mean, is that possible?
Exactly. I mean, it seems to be a Pandora's box of issues, right? I mean, if Syria were to provide us with a list of 100 names and asked us to prevent them from ever coming to the United States, we would want to know how they got that list of names, right? We would want to know whether it's based on testimony obtained through torture or whether it's just because it's from a minority group. And with the current system in place, and I haven't seen what Obama is proposing, it seems like that set of checks and balances is not going to be sufficient to preserve the liberties that we, you know, require.
Is there any international organization that you would trust or has any kind of a track record doing something like this, say the IAEA involved with nuclear transit, the International Air Travel Association, which deals with safety and uniform air travel rules?
You know, coordination is very important, and rather than it being necessarily the solution being through a particular organization, I think that lists and blacklists and requirements that don't have sufficient process is really what needs to be scrutinized. And unfortunately, it doesn't look like with the proposals that are on the table that they're going to be anything better than what we have here domestically. In fact, that would actually be a lot more than I would expect to see.
Can you give me the name of somebody who has been caught in the net, and you would expect to be caught in a net like this if it's enlarged to a global protocol of some kind, cases that maybe you have dealt with?
Unfortunately, all the cases that I have dealt with are people who have been caught in the net and who shouldn't have been caught in the net, and that's precisely the problem. When these kinds of lists and these kinds of regulations are a bit of a one-way ratchet. It's really easy to get on. It's very difficult to get off. And nobody wants anything to happen on their watch. And so law enforcement agencies and officers who are charged with, you know, keeping us all safe are going to err on the side of overplacement, right?
But we've established that. Are we talking about well-meaning sheikhs who work in mosques and cities? Or are we talking about business people, people with just names that are suspect?
We're talking about people who have family in the Middle East or who have family in Pakistan and who regularly travel over there, who are maybe from a region that is a region that's, you know, that has a certain degree of conflict, and who find themselves on this watch list because they fit that profile. They tend to be Muslim men, but it really is as broad as that sometimes.
Diallo Shamas is an attorney at the CLEAR, Creating Law Enforcement Accountability and Responsibility Project at the City University of New York, questioning whether it's even workable to create a global protocol for the restricting of terrorist suspects in air travel border to border around the world. Diallo, thank you so much.
Thank you.